Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ormoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The 2016 Olympic Games are set to start Friday, August 5th. Athletes are gearing up to compete in one of the most prestigious sporting events globally. Nearly 500,000 people are expected to visit the Games. While excitement is building up, some experts have raised concerns about holding the Summer Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro because of the Zika outbreak that has hit the country for about 2 years now. We will address this issue today, and we will look at the potential impact of the Zika virus on the Olympic Games. In addition, we will discuss what it takes for athletes to prepare for such high-level competitions and overall look at the health benefits of sports. Joining us for this discussion from New York is Dr. Lee Eagle, Clinical Associate Professor at the Tisch Institute and Co-Director of Sports and Society at NYU School of Professional Studies. Dr. Eagle, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you and once again talk to you. We had you on the radio, on the TV show before, and it's really good to have you for a lengthy discussion on radio. And let me remind our listeners that we will talk about the subject in a moment, but if you have any questions or comments for Dr. Eagle, you can always email us at healthchat@voanews.com. And we will start discussing sports and health, looking at the Olympics in a moment. But first, here is an update.
Health officials in Brazil say the risk of Zika virus infections at the Olympic Games is low and an issue that has been almost overcome. Nearly 500,000 people are expected to visit the Games, which start on Friday. Daniel Sorans is the Municipal Health Secretary in Rio.
Já vinha desde...
Since November of last year, we have already been showing projections and scientific studies that show this won't be an issue during the Olympics. From 2 weeks before the Games, the number of cases were almost non-expressive. In a city, there are very rare instances, and for us, it's an issue that we have more than overcome.
Brazil has been hardest hit by the Zika outbreak. Rio de Janeiro, the huge seaside city hosting the Olympic Games, has been riddled with setbacks in the lead-up to the sporting event, including delays in preparations, lack of funds, and political turmoil. Many athletes have withdrawn from the Olympics over concerns about the Zika virus, which has been linked to birth defects in newborn babies and possible neurological problems in adults. But some tourists remain undeterred.
Well, of course, we thought about it before we left, and yeah, we have friends who are also doctors, but if you think about it rationally and look at the numbers, one can get all sorts of illnesses when you're traveling, but it was on our mind, but we're not especially concerned about it now. We considered it for sure, but it didn't stop us from coming to Brazil.
I came from Australia, so in Australia, they told us some ways that you can protect yourself against Zika, and use mosquito sprays and some medicine, so yeah, should be fine. I'm using it and I don't worry about it.
There is currently no vaccine or treatment for the disease, which is spread primarily through the bite of an infected mosquito. Experts say it can also spread through sexual transmission. Zika-carrying mosquitoes are believed to have reached the U.S. mainland, with multiple cases of local transmission reported in Florida. Global health officials are racing to better understand the Zika virus, which has spread to many countries in the Americas.
Dr. Eagle, let me have your reaction to this report. Officials in Brazil say basically there is no need to worry about Zika. What do you say?
Well, some of the officials in Brazil have been saying for quite some time that there's no need to worry about Zika. And there, and there's a bigger picture, and there's more to just Zika. And it means looking at the time and place. But what I mean by that is, consider this. Brazil and Rio de Janeiro in particular are experiencing enormous turbulence in economy, in politics, in its social condition. And then put a sports mega event like an Olympic Games on top of that, and we're already talking about severely stressed systems, healthcare, infrastructure, security. Now put a major virus outbreak like Zika on top of all of that, and we have to continue asking questions. What are you going to do about resources? Where are you going to put people, where are you going to put money? And you look at the system all around, it's severely stressed. So this isn't really just about Zika virus and whether or not the science at the moment says that it is something we should be very concerned about or only mildly concerned about. It's that there's a larger picture there. So for Brazilian officials or any officials to say, don't worry about it, it's pretty mild, it's really not the whole story, and it's not all of the science that's out there.
We are basically 3 to 4 days out from the Olympics. At this point, obviously nothing can be done in terms of cancellation. So then what should they do, Dr. Eagle?
Well, this has been the great question. You've just asked the great question, what to do. And at this point, because it looks like short of any catastrophe, and let's hope nothing anymore happens, even the smallest thing, the games are not going to be canceled. So at this point, I think you listen to a lot of the comments that you picked up from people who were there in the piece that was just on. It's about informed consent. And it's about having enough of the information, enough of the right information to make a good decision. And I thought it was interesting that one of the people who was interviewed said, well, you know, we had some information, we figured that we could make a rational decision. And as I kept listening, I thought, okay, well, let's stop there, because if we're talking about human beings, as much as we like to think that we think and feel in rational ways, we just don't. And it leads to behaviors that aren't rational. So that means that, and I think we can all imagine a time when we thought about a situation that was coming up and we figured, oh, I'll behave in such and such a way. And then that moment comes up and we only find ourselves behaving in a way that's just different than what we anticipated. I think that very much applies to the Zika virus outbreak in Rio and around the world.
And earlier, I think about 1 or 2 months ago, there was an open letter that was written to the World Health Organization. 150 people signed off on this letter, experts from various backgrounds. And you were one of the authors of the letter. And you basically, the letter was asking to postpone the Olympic Games. Now, it has not been postponed. Has the WHO responded directly to this letter?
Again, great question. The World Health Organization has responded in some different ways, some of them very public and some of them through conversations that are just exactly that. They're just conversations and discussions. What I think the interesting thing to look at is in terms of the World Health Organization and the response to that letter, which now, by the way, has more than 200 experts from around the world signed on to it. The thing to look at is how the advisories from the World Health Organization have changed over a short period of time. And the letter wasn't the first time that I and some colleagues had been writing about this, but each time it seems the World Health Organization sort of wakes up to the news that some people who are in the professions are writing about this. They're researching it and say, you know, there's a problem here. You've got to think about it. You've got to advise on the full picture. Mm-hmm. Then it takes a few days. The World Health Organization comes around and says, oh, you know what? Now we suggest it may be, and I'm just throwing this out there, it may be, abstain from sexual relations for a few weeks. Then it becomes a month. Then it's a couple of months. Then it's 6 months. Then it's a year. Then it's 2 years. So it keeps changing with the science, but it seems that they've got to be prodded, or it's got to be prodded to get there. So the responses have been, I'd say they're piecemeal. Uh-huh. And not directly to that letter, although there have been some commentary directly to that letter, which basically said, we're not going to postpone the games, we're not going to move the games. That's been about it. So it's in little pieces that require a lot of stringing together for people who are out in the world.
The World Health officials are saying, you know, there's no reason to believe that the Zika virus poses a threat. Even some high-level officials from WHO are even traveling to Brazil. I don't know if it's to make a point or just to take part in the celebration. But why would the WHO say otherwise if it poses a problem? Do you think that they don't understand fully the scope of the problem? I mean, WHO is the body, the ultimate body that ensures global health, I assume. And why would they not see the threat or the danger?
Well, to continue responding to your thoughtful questions, these great questions.
Thank you.
Well, it's very much the case. And these are the questions that we're posing to the World Health Organization and other international organizing bodies that have a finger in Rio, a finger in the Olympic Games. And I certainly won't speak for the World Health Organization or any of the people who are executives in it or decision makers in it. But I think when we really cut down to everything, what you've really got to figure is that the situation is not unique to how people think and feel and behave in similar situations. And sometimes we get into a mode where there's so much in the way of time, so much in the way of money, so much in the way of overall resources that they're so far down the line. They just think, you know what, we've just got to go through with it. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, and it's a roll of the dice in some situations, and this is one where it's at the very least that kind of roll of the dice, a bet.
Okay, and we do hope to have a follow-up with someone from WHO to answer these questions that you qualify as great questions indeed.
And
so will you be, I suppose you are not going to the Olympic Games?
I have no plans to go to the Olympic Games. I'm not sure whether they would let me in the country at this point or near the Olympic venues. But, you know, the tough thing here, and to be clear about it, is that this isn't what we've written up in the letter and in commentary around it, is that this is not to say the games and the Olympic movement, the Olympic spirit shouldn't go on. It's actually quite the contrary. It's that that the conditions in Rio, including Zika virus and the way that it's being managed, are a threat to the Olympic movement. Because if things go wrong here, number one, just in terms of the Olympics, it's going to be tough to recover. That's one piece of it. The other piece of it, of course, is from an international health perspective, and that is about the transmission of Zika around the world. And caution to say, and this is part of the letter, is that just because things may be under some control in Rio doesn't mean that somebody can't contract Zika virus there and bring it back home and have it and be a carrier where it starts spreading, especially in countries that don't have the resources. So when we look at something that's international like the Olympic Games, we got people traveling in and out of Brazil to begin with, and now got many more. These are all causes for concern, and to your great questions, those would be the ones to pose to the people, for example, with the World Health Organization.
Yes, and we're just seeing that there are reports of the Zika in Miami. You know, some people have come up with some symptoms, and it's in development, but definitely something to keep an eye on. Dr. Eagle, we will we have to take a short break for the news, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion. And we're also curious to find out about what it takes. I mean, I did some sports when I was younger, and I still do, but I definitely am not qualified to go to the Olympics. So we want to know what it takes to get to that level of competition readiness, if I may say so. What does it take for one person to be able to compete at the Olympic and another person to just play on the treadmill at home like I do? So we are going to come back.
You and me both.
We are going to come back and continue the conversation, Dr. Eagle. So don't go away. We'll be right back for more.
Thank you.
It's now time for the news with Sanusi Diallo.
A new report by UNICEF warned that babies who are not breastfed within the first hour of life are at greater risk of dying. It says 77 million of newborns worldwide, and that's one in two babies, are introduced to the breast immediately, depriving them of essential and life-saving nutrients and antibodies. Sub-Saharan Africa is of particular concern, where infant mortality rates are highest. The report says if all babies are fed nothing but breast milk, in the first 6 months, over 8 million lives could be saved worldwide every year. Experts say, among other things, breast milk boosts early childhood development and decrease the risk of non-communicable diseases, including childhood asthma and obesity. Officials in Brazil say the Zika virus is not a threat for the Olympics game, scheduled to start on Friday, August 5th. However, concerns continue to grow about the mosquito-borne disease. In Florida, officials are asking the U.S. federal government for help combating an outbreak of Zika. 14 cases of the disease have been reported in a 2.5 square kilometers neighborhood near the state's southern tips. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention warned pregnant women Monday not to travel to the area just north of Miami. And finally, researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have developed an experimental vaccine that they say may offer promise for quick response to disease outbreaks in people. The vaccine can be made in just a week and has protected mice against influenza, Ebola, and Zika viruses. The MIT scientists say the vaccine, still in early developmental stage, harnesses messenger RNA, a genetic material that can be programmed to fight any viral, bacterial, or parasitic disease by provoking an amplified immune response in the body. The researchers said the approach allows for quickly creating vaccine customized to fight various pathogens, in contrast to the lengthy development needed for traditional vaccine. And that's the wrap-up of the latest health news.
Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us today, we are discussing health and the Olympics. And our guest is Dr. Lee Eagle. He is Clinical Associate Professor at the Tisch Institute and co-director of Sports and Society at New York University School of Professional Studies. So before the break, Dr. Eagle, we spoke about the Zika outbreak. Before we move to the next topic, let me just get your final thought about this subject. Again, we are a few days away. The Zika will take place. You talk about the issue, the Olympics will take place, rather. You talk about the issues of this, the Olympic Games, not just being the Zika virus, but looking at the big picture. What would you say to sum up in terms of the taking steps for perhaps a better Olympic Games as opposed to what is projected, given what is happening now with the Zika outbreak and other challenges?
Well, I think the interesting thing to look at, unfortunately, is that the Rio Games, almost however they turn out, individually or collectively, are really a mark for the Olympic movement and for the International Olympic Committee to revise its business model. Mm-hmm. It's been working off the same model since 1984, the Olympic Games in Los Angeles, when the Games first became a business, when they were first really recognized as a business with sponsorships and the whole lot. And we've been at it for a good long time. There's a great rule of thumb, I think, that Any policy or program created by a human being outlasts its usefulness. Mm-hmm. Certainly by 40 years' time, and probably in the world today that moves so quickly, maybe it's 20 years or even less. And so the Olympic movement, the International Olympic Committee, really needs to reimagine and rethink its business model. Part of that may include something that that one of the other co-authors on this this letter to the World Health Organization, Arthur Kaplan, and I wrote about, as well as many others have written about, that maybe the Olympics needs to really think about having a small handful of dedicated sites to move the games around. And that's just one idea, but they've got to really think through something new, because Rio is an example of a model that has outlasted its usefulness.
Very good point. So rethinking the business model, among other things. Thank you for that. Now, let's move to another subject that I really was waiting in terms of our discussion to ask you, because when I was younger, I used to think, you know, I had some skills in terms of sports, but I realized I didn't go very far. And some people can go and compete at the Olympics, and I can just do, I don't know, barely 30 minutes on my treadmill. So what does it take, Dr. Eagle, to get to that level of competitiveness in terms of sports? Is it mental? Is it all in the brain first, or is it physical?
Wow, keep coming with the great questions. So this is a great bridge from what we were just talking about with Zika virus and it affecting the Olympic Games and who may go and who may not go, into a real cause for concern in that way, because here are athletes who have dedicated their lives to the pursuit of the Olympic Games just for the chance to compete. Imagine that if you could. Just for the chance to walk into an Olympic venue and compete on that stage, it is the height of a career, and then to go on and be in competition for a medal. So what does it take to do that? It certainly takes an impressive mix of mind and body, that's for sure. But it may not be all of what everybody thinks, because what the science seems to show us, and plenty of anecdotal evidence to go with that, is that focusing on one sport very early on and tracking that all the way from when a child is a baby does not make an elite athlete. Mm. There are some cases, certainly, where that is what happened, where there's somebody who this could be a Tiger Woods in golf before an unfortunate, let's say, Thanksgiving holiday where his career seemed to take a turn. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are these romantic stories about athletes who were 6 months old, a year old, 3 years old, and who seemed to just be on this road to elite athleticism. The truth is that for the most part, it's not that. It's a mix of experiences in sport, learning how to use one's body over time, and then in some cases, depending on the sport, the late teenage years or even into early 20s, where we see people begin to really develop their athletic skill, and we can start to look and see just how elite they can become. Certainly takes, again, to all of that, particular skill physically, and there's an old line that 90% of sports is mental, mm-hmm. and it's probably at least that. There is a significant mental, psychological component to becoming an elite athlete, and that's what the Olympians achieve.
Mm, that's very interesting. I mean, when we look at the physical aspect of it, and you talked about age, you said that about people in their 20s develop athletic skills. Mm-hmm. Will there be a specific age where it is best to start in childhood if we want to be a great athlete in a specific sport, does it depend on the type of sport or other factors?
It depends on a whole host of factors. Okay. And that's interesting. So One of my colleagues at NYU is Cameron Myler. She's a four-time Olympian in the Winter Games in Luge. Okay. And she tells wonderful stories about how when she was younger, she was still a child, her parents took her to the Olympic venue in Lake Placid, New York, not far from where they lived. And she had an opportunity to get on a luge sled and go down the track. And she said, oh, my God, this is it. And, you know, years later and four Olympics later, there you go. That's one example. There are other examples, and I think we'll probably see this as the Olympics come into focus over the coming weeks, stories of people who weren't discovered or didn't discover their talent and their skill until they were in their teen years or into their 20s. So it really depends, and it also depends on the type of position that someone's playing in that mm-hmm. in a particular sport as well. So there are just a whole host of factors. There's no, you know, silver bullet answer to what makes an Olympian, to what makes an elite athlete. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that in many cases, in too many cases, now especially because so many people love the idea of seeing a child excel in a sport and pressing that child into participation over and over and over and over again. One thing is later on, many of them burn out. But the other thing is we're missing out on a lot of kids who develop later, who may be great athletes. And we're also missing out on letting those kids have an opportunity to participate in sports. So they're starting to wash out of sports, not experience it, and they don't come back to it. And you said that you're good about getting on a treadmill for 30 minutes. That's terrific. There are people who get washed out of sports at such a young age that they don't even get involved in physical activity.
Oh, wow. That's something. Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned something, the burnout, right? Some people talk about being burned out and things like that. At what point does someone get burned out? Is it over? Is it too much training or not having enough strength to carry on?
It's overtraining, and it's a context where the number of factors are too much, not only on their body, but certainly on their mind. And I think one thing that's interesting from some research that we've done here at NYU is that one example is the Soviet hockey team that dominated, and the ice hockey team that dominated in the 1970s and 1980s. I can tell you certainly from a Western point of view, it looked like these players were just going through hockey all the time. I think they had 36 days off during the entire year. Wow. And that would be one day every once in a while to go home from their training camp and to be with their families. The rest of it was hockey, you know, before you woke up in the morning, after you woke up, they gave you some food, then afternoon, more food, more hockey, you know, on and on and on. It just seemed hockey all the time. But one thing we discovered getting in and under that is that the coaches, and one in particular who really founded that system, really had a love for players. And if you just watched from the outside, you would never see that because he was a tough taskmaster. Mm-hmm. So if you're just watching from the stands, you'd see a coach who just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and it looked like he over-pushed. Yet they won all these championships, and it's because underneath all of that, behind the scenes, what people didn't see was a true coach, somebody who literally brought his players along and saw them as people.
Wow, that's incredible. Dr. Ligo, it was so good to have you. We have to leave it there, unfortunately. We appreciate your time on the show today.
Well, thank you. Always an honor to be with you, and keep taking to that treadmill.
Thank you. I need that encouragement. And thanks to all our listeners for joining us today. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi, with Sanusi Diallo for the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.